Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life, behind the scenes of a YouTube creator. It's the 12th of October 2024, and it's 25 past seven. I'm going to make myself a cup of coffee and then tell you what our diarists said. We are up and out this morning to go to Norfolk to take part, well, or experience an old-fashioned farming day this afternoon. I hope there's just about enough water in that jug. And then after that, we're staying the night, and the following day we're learning about electroculture. Or as they call it, energy culture, in order to stop the, I suppose, the sensors for some reason. I don't know why that would be. Excuse me. But apparently they're somewhat nervous of the sensors and things, so it's a bit of a shame. But we can get round it by what they're doing, just by changing the name, apparently. So there it is. Right, cup for the coffee. Yesterday was a busy day. I had let's think, two interviews to do and three videos to make, emails to answer, and some text to write. And yes, barely got a chance to get outside. The weather wasn't brilliant, but it wasn't, as far as I'm aware, too bad. There was, people were saying that they had sunshine and we had sort of patchy sunshine, clouds, but not thick white clouds that we've been recently very used to seeing, rather, that had been generated. I think people are beginning now to talk about at least the cloud stuff, and people are questioning the vaccine rollout. I think these are the two major things that people are talking about. Of course, they're talking about a tight squeeze on their earnings. Older people will be very aware of the winter payments have been stopped. That's going to see a tight squeeze on people paying their bills or trying to buy food. The food that they'll buy will be the cheapest, of course, and that means it won't be the most healthy. You can see what the government are up to, can't you? They're not a kind, nice, benevolent government if they are squeezing ordinary people at the same time deciding they're going to send money to other parts of the world so that those people can kill each other. I mean, it is a nonsense. Bear with me, I just need to... I've got couple of things here which I didn't wash up last night that need to be quickly dealt with in the washing machine, in the washing bowl. You just cover them with hot water. The water is very hot, fortunately. I think I should take my supplements before we go. It's going nicely. And I've got to find a selection of pipes to take. I must pay for the Dartford Tunnel, that's the other thing one has to do. That'll do. Pay for the Dartford Tunnel. Two journeys, which in a van I think is, I can't remember, it's £6 a go or £3 a go. It's not a lot, fortunately. In a van. Anyway, that light is a bit harsh. Oh, I haven't opened the windows, that's why. Not open the windows, open the curtains in the front room. Oh, I've had a nice shave, both on my face and on my head. I should be away, so I want a nice close shave so that it, I don't have to bother in the morning. We're being put up in a lovely barn conversion. And so that would be good. Although we're just bringing a air mattress for little Joe, who will be with us. Now, let me... Oh, you know what I did? Forgot to bring my coffee through. Let's go back and grab that. Was I talking about this on The Naked Englishman or just to somebody that I was saying it's interesting when you go around different people's houses, and it seems to me that not that many people these days have many books. They'll have a few books. They don't have LPs on display. I don't, unless they're of a certain type that collect them and have an old-fashioned record player, like a Gerard. Was it Gerard or Garrard? I can't remember what it was called, which was a sort of standard record player of its day. Right, so... Here we go. This is good old Dorothy Wordsworth, 1800 in Westmoreland. As she says on... Wait a minute. I don't think I read yesterday's, did I? I don't think I read it, so that's why I'm looking at it now, thinking, hang on, it's the 12th today, isn't it? She says, "Fine October morning. After dinner, we walked up Greenhead Gill in search of a sheepfold. The colours of the mountains soft and rich with..." Oh, I did read that. Yes, I did read that. I beg your pardon. I did read that one. So we are on the 12th. This is Thomas Gray, first of all, then 1769 in the West Riding. Thomas Gray, I'm not sure if we've had him before. Ingleborough was completely wrapped in clouds, all but its summit, which might have been easily mistaken for a long black cloud too, fraught with an approaching storm. Quick slurp of the coffee to get the old brain working. Dorothy Wordsworth in 1800 did say this on this day. "We pulled apples after dinner, a large basketful. We walked before tea by Bainriggs to observe the many-coloured foliage. The oaks dark green with some yellow leaves, the birches generally still green, some near the water yellowish, the sycamore crimson and crimson tuft, the mountain ash a deep orange, the common ash lemon colour, but many ashes still fresh in their summer green." So that's interesting, pulling apples after dinner. Must have had an early dinner because it would have got dark, would it not, earlier? Depends on their time, I suppose, because when did British summertime come in? Did that come in... Were they just still in GMT back in the 1800s? When did they institute British summertime? Cleaning my glasses there for a moment. But that's an interesting thing, isn't it? When you read books, I haven't got my computer on to be able to look it up to find out when, you know, British summertime started. But that would be an interesting thing, particularly when you're talking about this time of year in the evening, because if you know it was, I don't know, let's say it was in the 1930s for the sake of argument, or the 40s or whenever it was, then you realise actually when it's 7 o'clock it was really 6 o'clock in these books, so that after dinner it would have been lighter. So that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I was sent, I still haven't had a chance to read the letter. I said a book I don't really understand. This isn't my area to you. I believe this is a friend of a chap who's written to me. And I need to acknowledge him, but... I'm not sure. Yes, it is. He was going to send me some stuff, this chap says. And he says, I've not had a chance. So... He sent... Crikey. So now, this is a subject matter I don't really understand. So the book is by a chap called Lawrence Blanchard. And it's called Identifying Biblical Israel Today, The Evidence. Now, you know, this isn't really my area of expertise. I've left the Middle East stuff. I confess. I don't understand it. And one of the things I think intrinsically to me is simply that, who do you take your information from in such a confusing place? Because there are some people are on one side and some people are on the other side, and I don't really understand the whole thing. I haven't read it. I never followed it when I was a kid or growing up. It's just been one of those things I thought, oh, that's something in the Middle East. It's got nothing to do with me. Well, we hear about it in the news. Not that I watch the news. I hear about it from people who tell me that it's in the news and that there is some difficulties going over there. But I do deliberately, I suppose, in order to not worry about it, in that area, I put my head in the sand, and I there's so many other things to concentrate on and to, you know, things that actually affect us here and now. And yes, I suppose people will say, but what happens over there may well escalate to some kind of war, or people will be talking about it over here, perhaps getting into difficult arguments, and you may have to take a side sooner or later. And I don't know how true any of that is, actually, because, to be honest with you, I want to get on our own patch of land and forget the rest of everybody else. Not forget everybody else, if you know what I mean, but concentrate on the things that matter to myself and the people I'm working with and my families and stuff. Anyway, let's just have a quick look at this briefly, because I'm not sure. Before you can understand what the Bible says and what it means by what it says, you need to know who's who. It's like going to a stage play. If you do not know who the characters are in the play, you cannot understand it. Well, that's true, but often you go to a play without knowing who the characters are, and you, if the playwright is good, you learn who the characters are. It's like a novel. You cannot assume, I would disagree with that very first statement, that you cannot assume that the audience knows what you're talking about. It has to unfold. Otherwise, you'd never pick up a book if you had to know what it was about before you picked it up. However, if you do not know the characters in the play, you cannot understand. If you have read the Bible, if you've read book one, Discover the Story of the Bible Heritage, you already understand why it's critical today to identify the Jews and the Gentiles. Identifying biblical Israel today, the evidence, book two, takes you to the next level and traces the descendants of the biblical Israelites throughout history to the present day. Well, I'm not sure that I really want to know, but let's go on. What's inside this book? The evidence, carefully and clearly written, with documentation history that proves beyond a reasonable doubt who the genuine people of Israel are today. Here is a rundown of the important topics. And then there's a whole load of stuff. So, you know, I suppose you've got to understand the arguments. I'm just opening this up, and there's a page of different heraldic emblems of different tribes. This is really not my area of A, knowledge, and B, interest. I mean, there's part of me that's just going, I'm just not interested in this stuff. With the greatest respect to the author to send it to me, with, you know, he says if you've read the Bible, but to be honest, I haven't read the Bible. So, but England becomes part of, I'm just looking at, there's some maps and things in here with migrations of Israelites to Britain. So this is something I've been hearing about a little bit, I suppose. Somebody else wrote a book. Here, we'll just read a little bit here just to explore it, because people will find that I'm very ignorant on this subject. And it's true, I am. But I make no bones about that. I'm ignorant on quantum physics, I suppose, although, you know, a little bit perhaps in quantum. I still don't really know what quantum means. But I'm knowledgeable in other things. And perhaps people will say, well, you ought to know about this stuff, you know, because it's happening in the world. And that may be true, but anyway, I don't want to keep going over the old arguments. So this, let's have a look and see what it says on this chapter 5. We now come to the time in history when a descendant of Dada, not, I don't think this is Dada, the art movement, of the royal line of Judah, the son of Jacob stroke Israel, migrated to England and founded the city of New Troy, which is known as London today. Okay, that's an interesting claim. Let's go back to what we discovered in chapter 1, where we documented what before the Exodus event. Dada founded the city in Troy in modern-day Turkey about 1527 BC. Troy was destroyed in 1183 BC. At the time it was being destroyed, Dada's greatest great 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 three great grandson, Anchises, or I don't know how you pronounce that, fled Troy, and his son Aeneas, or something, A-E-N-E-A-S, Aeneas, went to Italy, where they settled. Aeneas married the king's daughter, and the great-grandson was named Brutus. Now, I've heard about Brutus. The well-known history of Brutus is documented by Geoffrey of Monmouth in the Welsh Chronicles. Yes, and there's some people that say that that is not actually true, or he has... It's interesting, this guy, this is obviously an American bloke, he's spelt Geoffrey of Monmouth with a J. Commonly, it's spelt with a G. So, anyway, we can carry on. Due to a set of unfortunate circumstances, Brutus was exiled out of Italy. Brutus went to Greece, where he met up with the slaves whose ancestors were also from the Trojan War. After electing him as their leader, they defeated their captors and sailed out of the Mediterranean Sea through the Pillars of Hercules, the Straits of Gibraltar. Along the way, they met up with another group of Trojans led by Corineus, after who Cornwall is named, who was also escaping the captors. And there's a picture here of Brutus Stone in Totnes. They combined forces and landed in Gaul, with Brutus being acclaimed as their overall king. The Trojans again set sail and became ashore at Totnes in Trojans again set sail, oh, sorry, in Totnes in Devon. At some time in the 12th century BC, the land and the people were subsequently to derive their names from Brutus. Then Brutus found the city of Trinovantium, or the New Troy, which was later to become the city of London. Brutus, the first king of the Britons, reigned over his people in this island for 23 years, from 1104 to 1081. Oh, I see. Yes, that is 23 years, because you're going backwards, aren't you? Because that's BC. I have read or half read a book about Brutus, and I got pretty much most of the way through a book about King Arthur, which talks about Brutus as well. We're not talking about the Brutus in, you know, the one that stabbed Caesar. This is a different Brutus. You know, et tu, Brutus. So, this is, I guess this is trying to prove something of identifying the biblical Israel and what it is today. The interesting thing is I have heard that actually the Holy Land and all of that is up in, there is a conspiracy. I mean, I don't know if it's a conspiracy or it's a rumour. It's actually in Scotland, in Edinburgh. That Edinburgh is the place. Now, I have no idea. You know, you get onto the, you do get onto the very odd conspiracies or strange stories. You've got to take it. So I think this is book one. There's a tiny little book here. The Covenant Legacy of the Northeastern People, European People. It's a tiny little book, again, with a few heralds in it. The Heraldry of Ancient Israel. And it's interesting that he... Right. It's interesting that he refers to the Bible in all of this. And I suppose this is because you're trying to get... You know, what is the Bible at the end of the day? It's a whole load of, seems to me, mystic writing from a period that's been cobbled together in a bunch of stories that may or may not have meaning today. It may or may not have had meaning in its day, or it may have been a controlling mechanism with stories. Now, some people say it's a book of law. The law is based on the back of it. Doesn't mean it's true. It's just they've got to base it on something. Or maybe it is factually true. I mean, I just don't know. I'll be completely honest. I've just opened this at random, and it says, the God of the Bible has chosen and covenanted with a people, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to establish and manifest his kingdom here on earth. And you just wonder, well, if God is all as powerful as he says, why does he need to... what's the word? Covenant with people. That kingdom can be described as righteousness, justice, order, and peace. I wish it was. This is the purpose of which God chose his covenant people. But is that what we have today in our representative nations? Well, no, clearly not. And that's because God didn't set them up, did they? The truth is that we, the covenant people in our nations, are in a crisis. We're hurtling down a highway of destruction and disintegration. It's true. And then he lists some points here. Foreign immigration is overwhelming in our lands. Crime and violence is increasing. Economic collapse is upon us. Anti-white discrimination and hatred is now accepted and promoted. We're being duped into unending global conflicts. Our historically shared culture and Christian faith are quickly fading away. It has been replaced with political and moral corruption. What is at stake at this point in our history? Our freedom to choose, preservation of our God-given rights, safety and security, our children's future. And so this is a little book obviously pointing to something that's happened in the past and then about the migrations and what the migrations are today. So thank you very much to the gentleman who sent it. And he has given me a book, a long letter. This is, I haven't got the time at the moment to read it. That's the problem. There's too many other things I've got on the go. So, not least, I'm writing my own book, which will be, hopefully, something to promote on the back of the show. Oh, I haven't written my diary up either recently, so I've got to do that. There's a lot of things that got to be done. Let me just take a slurp of coffee. So, I need to find some clothes. What do I need to do? I need to pay for the bridge that we go over, or the Dartford Crossing, as it's more known. And then at 9, in about an hour and a half, I go and pick up. It's probably in about an hour and 15 now. Got to go and pick up Julia. I've got to release the video for today, which I have recorded, and schedule the one for Sunday, which I have recorded, and all of that. It's just... some days it feels... yesterday was a day when it did feel everything was a little bit on top of me and a bit overwhelming, because I just needed some time to stop, rest, spend a bit of time writing, catching up. We've been sort of travelling quite a bit, and the diary is rammed at the moment with interviews. And I think my plan is to, in early November, I'm not going to take any more interviews on. I'll carry on doing the monologues. And I think for November and December, I will take most of that time out from the interviews, which will free up the afternoons and the days, because I can do the monologues anywhere, really, to a certain degree. And I think I'm going to... we're going to try and sort out this land that we want to buy whilst we can, and try and just find something and start getting tracks on it, because I've done 2 years of this very intensive truth-telling stuff and learning and attending and being an agony aunt to people in an area that is new still to me, and I'm being pulled from pillar to post by the emails asking for help or asking for me to turn up and do something and do talks. Don't mind doing the talks. I'm a bit nervous about being any kind of authority on any of this. And my head's been above the parapet for a couple of years. And I'm sure I'm on a list of interested people. But I'm not really, you know... The point, I don't mind telling people they've got to be responsible for their lives and they've got to get out of the jurisdiction and things like that. That's you know, because that's genuine and that's true. And but there's areas which I'm not keen to, like this business with Israel and all of this stuff. And I don't want to comment on that. I don't know. And I don't want to put my head up above the parapet, and I don't want to cause grief to anybody. And it's a very frustrating. I just, you know, more and more as I get older, I want a much simpler life. You know, I enjoy the writing. I have done writing most of my life, on and off, in bits and pieces, writing plays, writing children's books, writing scripts, writing documentary scripts and things like that, and performance and laughing at myself in some fashion. And... I enjoy reading about all sorts of different aspects of life, and hence the books reflect that. I don't want to cause anybody any harm. I don't want to cause any loss or injury. And I don't really want to get wrapped up in politics. I want to, you know, create a group of people that I love and admire, not create them, but, you know, discover them and pull them to me, as it were. And then I want to farm, and I want to grow. I want to have some animals. I want to be more with nature, and I want simplicity. I don't need complicated, problematic lives. Who does? Who really does? Some people seem to be chasing huge goals because they want money or power. I'm not chasing any of that. I don't particularly... you know, I need enough money to be able to just get on and not worry about it like we all do. But I think it's erroneous to go after that and to be, and what do you call by power, you know, governing other people or telling other people what to do or being above other people. I don't think I'm above anybody. I look up to most people because they've got knowledge I haven't got, whether they know it or not. And, I admire a lot of people who have achieved certain things against the odds, and who are prepared to share that knowledge and help others along the way. And I think that's right and proper, and it's a good thing to follow. But I'm just in my teetering into the senior years, so. The fast pace of work and some of the stuff now, I'm not that interested in. I don't mind the travelling to a degree, and if I've got talks and people are interested in what I'm doing and I can share some knowledge from that point of view, I think that's interesting, and meet others. But I want to escape the sort of dead corporate non-life world and the the pressure, and the horrible politics of today. You know, it's just, I don't want any of that. Just give me a nice, quiet, pure world. I'm not going to harm anybody. And I think that's the same for a lot of people. People basically want to get on. And the people who have controlled the world have stirred us up a little bit. And I think their goals are just, well, you know, I think they'll never be happy. That's their problem, until they know who they really are and can also have a more peaceful life. Perhaps because they've got too much money, they're just so bored that whilst they can buy anything, they probably don't really have a lot of creativity other than trying to control people, which is a shame because they've taken the wrong fork. And actually the fork in the journey that they ought to have taken, I believe, is to have been more philanthropic and to have helped people, and they would have been rewarded, you know, not financially, but in their life, rewarded by knowing that they were actually contributing something. They've contributed so much hatred, and whilst they think, aha, I'm achieving something, we realise, of course, and they will realise as they reach their deathbeds, they've actually achieved nothing other than hatred, resentment, and you know, people despising them and things like that. And that's nothing to be proud of, is it? They've had their head in a fog of error, it seems to me. But I suppose, you know, what do I suppose? I suppose I better end this. Thanks for listening, and won't be one tomorrow. Back on Monday. Bye for now.